Hey guys, it's Justin from the Chase Down here. We're doing things a little different this time around. This is an episode, a shared cross promotion with Dave Dufour, who hosts a podcast on Almighty Baller as well. This is On the NBA with Coach Dave. We're posting this on both of our feeds. We will be back with the regular episode of the Chase Down. I believe Carter is coming on with some gambling advice for all you degenerates out there. So check out this episode of On the NBA with Coach Dave, a little Chase Down cross promotion, and we'll be back at you with more finals coverage coming up soon.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup, oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection!
You guys want to introduce yourselves and say who you are and what you do? What's your Sam, you're doing the Light Years podcast, right?
Yeah, I write and do podcasts on Warriors World, longest standing independent site covering the Warriors.
And so and there you go. And Justin is your arch enemy.
it's yeah, I have a poster of him in my room that I just throw.
What's funny? At. And Justin is Justin Rowan, Fear the Sword, and the Chase Down, right?
That's correct.
Is that also, everything?
Also do some writing at Press Basketball. Not a ton, but I'm there.
But you are Canadian, so by law, you have to write for Press Basketball.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it. So you guys actually, it's really funny. The reason I got the idea to have you guys get together for a podcast
is because we're both handsome.
Yes, it's because I just wanted to stare into your beautiful faces.
Yeah.
Longingly. No, it's because you guys actually, for people that are unabashed homers for your team, you guys have the most amicable relationship, I think, that exists on Twitter. It's fantastic. I love it. I think it's how it ought to be instead of the crazy tribalism, and we could dig into that topic if you want to, but like most of Twitter, yeah, most of each team Twitter sort of acts like apes, right? It's like
not no.
it's one tribe versus the other, you know. Fuck your shit.
I mean, I'm not gonna act like I haven't gone there before, but
yeah. Oh, hey, look. Listen, I know that you love to bring up the triple double as much as I do. But when I do it, I don't have a team, so it's a little different. When you do it, it's funnier to me. I don't know why. And so I wanted to get you guys on because I really wanted to kind of get your perspectives. I like both of you guys. I think you guys have very well-measured takes. I think that you didn't come to these takes just because, you know, it's your team. I mean, you guys both are pulling for your own teams to win.
Right.
Here's what I'm thinking. Sam, give me your prediction first, since the Warriors are going to win. I'll let the winner go first. Give your prediction first and just give me, like, I don't know, like two key points to why you feel that way. I'm just really curious.
I picked Warriors in six on my podcast, and actually now I'm leaning Warriors in five just because I have such a hard time seeing them go winning it in Cleveland. Like, I kind of feel like if they don't do it in five, it's going to go seven, because it's just hard for me to imagine them closing out in Cleveland, assuming, you know, it's 3-2. My keys on it are basically the Warriors are healthy. I feel like if they were a little healthier last year, they would have closed it out for all the heroics Cleveland went through last year. I mean, it was a tie game till 1 minute left. It's not like the margin was that big, and they've replaced Harrison Barnes with Kevin Durant. And I would argue the ancillary role players they have now are no worse than the ones they had last year. They're just not as heralded because the strength of numbers thing was like kind of Kerr's calling card, and the Warriors got really good in 14-15. But I do think if the Warriors mess around, Cleveland can take the series. So my measured take on it is I'm going to go about 65-35. Like, I don't think it would be a massive upset if Cleveland took it. I think if Cleveland can control the tempo and slow it down versus the Warriors a little bit, they can frustrate them in the half court because the Warriors still haven't quite figured out that half court balance with Steph and KD, and I don't really think they will until sometime next year. They just don't even get forced to have to go to it most of the time. Like, they blow most teams out or can kind of, you know, have a 5-minute stretch where they put a 20-point run on you, and then they never really have to worry about that stuff.
Right. Justin, your turn.
Well, I'm a little mad at Sam for stealing my percentages for this series. 65-35 is pretty bang on. That's what I've been going with. I'm going with Cavs in six. A big part of that is just everybody playing at such a high level. There's a comfort that hasn't been there. LeBron, Kyrie, Love, Tristan, they're all playing at the highest level that they have in their career. My biggest thing, and I've brought this up before, is that LeBron has the ability to play for extended minutes beyond what Steph and Durant can do. He can play at 44 minutes, and even if he's not attacking for the full 44, he can control the pace of the game, and he can elevate the players around him to play at a high level. So if the starters on the Cavs can at least match the Warriors or hang around with them, I think there's the opportunity for the Cavs to win the minutes where the Warriors stagger, because of the impact that LeBron James has on the game. The Cavs are a much improved team. They have much better offensive weapons. And even though they've taken a calculated gamble on outscoring the Warriors, obviously they have defensive deficiencies, but they took a calculated gamble that if they can slow things down, they can keep the game in the half court, that they're going to be able to outscore this team.
Okay. So,
yeah, man, if you don't mind me jumping in.
Yeah, man, go ahead.
My biggest fear is the fact that Cleveland has the clear continuity edge. They're basically running back the same team for 3 years. There's just no way the Warriors are going to win that. But like I said, the Steph KD thing looks really good for year one, but it's not on par with what LeBron and Kyrie, like their comfort level together in year three. So, I think if the Warriors are going to win it, it'll take kind of the shape of that Spurs 2014 win over LeBron's Heat. If it goes into, you know, lots of grinded out close games, that kind of scares me from a Warriors perspective. Mm-hmm.
See, I actually think that if it gets into the close games, that's when you're going to see KD really prove his worth, where they can just give him the ball and let him work and get a bucket, which they didn't have that ability last year. Which that's why I have the Warriors sweeping. I think that the Warriors.
Sweep.
Yeah, I have them in a sweep. And you know, Justin and I, we talked about this the other night on the Bod Pod. I just think you're more likely to get a sweep than a 7-game series. I mean, it's probably going to go 5 if I had to guess. But I think a sweep is more interesting. So I'm just saying sweep. You know, but
I mean, LeBron has won a road game in every playoff series since. What, 2009?
But he's never played a team that was at this level. I mean, this team is better than last year's team. It's better than the team from the year before. And KD is – it's really funny. He's so not important to what they do, but he's very important for the things that the Cavs can take away. So if the Cavs really want to grind it out, that works toward KD, because KD is ridiculous in isolation and in post-ups. And there's no one on that team that can guard him. I mean, even LeBron is not guarding KD. It's just not going to happen. And I'm assuming he's going to start on him. I don't know how that's going to work. Justin, do you think they're starting JR on him?
I wouldn't be surprised if they start JR on him. It's just not something that they've typically, I mean, if you look at the regular season matchups, LeBron actually started on Clay for a lot of those games, which I don't think is necessarily optimal. I don't think you want to waste LeBron on running around screens. I mean, Clay's one of the best off-ball players in the league, and the Warriors do a really good job of maximizing that. So that really does take away his ability to roam. I wouldn't be opposed to starting Tristan Thompson on Durant and having LeBron play on Draymond Green. I think that allows him to roam and provide that support for Thompson, especially if you can keep this in the half court. And Thompson's someone that has the length and the foot speed to stick with Durant to a reasonable degree. As you said, David, like, even if Kawhi Leonard was on this team, Durant is still going to give him an efficient 30 points per game. Like, he's that good.
Yep.
So if Thompson can at least stay in front of him, and the Cavs are able to, by having LeBron on Draymond Green, take away some of the looks that Draymond can generate for the Splash Brothers, and you play solid defense everywhere else, then I think you're getting into that territory where you can hang around with them, you can match their production, maybe they go a little cold, you get hot, and you outscore those starters, and then all of a sudden you're into that scenario where you're outplaying those staggered minutes of the Warriors, and you can actually build a lead and give yourself a cushion to take chances, because the Cavs defense is predicated on taking chances and gambling, because if they play it straight up, they're going to have a lapse and they're going to give up an open shot.
See, and what I think the Warriors can do that none of the teams in the East were able to do, and this is part of the reason why the Cavs were so successful, the Cavs make you pay when they create turnovers. They get
right.
Their points off turnovers are fantastic. Well, the Warriors are really great at that too. And the Warriors
they've been a poor transition team though in the playoffs.
But they haven't really played a lot of had to play a lot of transition in the playoffs. I don't think that they've pushed the pace. They were really good during the season in transition.
For sure.
And the Cavs have been bad, really bad defensively in transition. So I just feel like it's a terrible matchup for the Cavs. And I mean, you know, you want to give them at least a game because of LeBron. I just think that the Warriors are too good. I don't know. I'm just a Warriors homer over here, Sam.
Oh, you, Dave, like, if they win game one, if the Cavs win game one, I'm living in your mentions. I am living in your mentions.
And I've been saying a Warriors sweep since, like, March.
Yeah, and I'm cool with it. As you said, it's more interesting to go bold.
Yeah, I mean, again, I want a seven-game series. I want what we had last year. Like, it was amazing. And it was that game seven was just fantastic, and you're sitting on the edge of your seat. I don't want the, you know, four games of 15-point blowouts.
I'll be shocked if they sweep them. Cleveland has too much fight. Like, this isn't the 2014 Heat where they're running on fumes or anything. I just think there's – in one of the first four games, at worst, I'd say probably game three, Cleveland's just going to start hitting a ton of shots. Like, they can shoot pretty much as well as the Warriors. They're just liable to get hot at least one game. That's at a bare minimum, assuming like the defense is poor and like a lot of things aren't going their way. It's hard to see them sweeping. And
yeah, well, the Cavs are actually out shooting the Warriors from three so far this postseason.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's the other thing that's interesting about this. Neither team's been tested in any way in the playoffs, really. Like, you know, maybe a couple games, total each team.
Yeah,
they've had to like kind of dig in a little bit, you know, like Utah gave the Warriors one scare, the Spurs gave the Warriors a half, but we can go into the reasons why, but that's another reason I'm kind of expecting the Warriors to get punched in their face at least one game, because 16-0 just it seems unrealistic, and I think it's going to be a lot more competitive than that.
Well, it really all depends on if LeBron is able to fully weaponize his testicles again in this series. I just think that that's something we're all overlooking. You know, all right. So Justin, the other day you tweeted about your article from last year previewing the finals.
Right.
And you actually said, the keys to the Cavs winning is Draymond being suspended. Now, do you feel responsible for ruining Sam's summer?
I was on the phone with Kiki. Sam knows this. DM'd him.
At worst, he ruined 2 weeks because getting KD, you know, like 13 days later was just like the ultimate consolation prize. We didn't even have it that bad. I was I was probably in a bad, I was in a bad mood for like, I don't know, a week or so. And,
it's and then, funny, okay, we I found felt the best too bad player. To even troll you. Like, that was the weirdest, the post-final sensation was just so weird. It took me about a week before I started like searching through my old messages or searching through Twitter looking for old tweets to like retweet for the slander. Like, I was just, I was like shocked, I was happy, I was at peace with life. Like, I didn't even have it in me.
Yeah, Justin, I'm at the point where I've started calling you a Twitter ninja because of like how great you are at finding these tweets. I mean, we've got our bod pod chat and you broke out a bunch the other day and it was just incredible.
I have fun. I mean, that's what this is. Like, right. Do we realize how stupid and ridiculous sports is? Like, it's 100% entertainment. It's theater. I'm here for the fun. Like,
as a Warrior fan, being as they won the title the year before, first one of my lifetime, first one in 40 years, like, it did suck to watch them blow the 3-1 lead, but it's like, I felt more pain with, let's just say, the Oakland A's, who like trade away their whole team if they have a bad year every year. Right. So it's like, as much as it sucked to watch them, I kind of, you know, I knew like it wasn't the end of the Warriors' run. Like, I feel like, let's say 2012 Celtics, when they almost beat the Heat, but you knew that was like the absolute last year of the KG and those guys, that those ones hurt because like, you know, they're just not going to get back there.
And in a lot of ways, this year feels like the Cavs are playing with house money. Like, they're a big underdog. Like, even if I think Sam and I are like giving the Cavs 35% chance, I think that's more than most people would give them. And even at that, that's still a considerable underdog. So it's not really expected that they're going to win. If they do win, obviously that elevates LeBron's legacy to a whole different level. And it's funny, like, this doesn't feel like a sequel to last year. Like,
No, not at all.
The first 2 years of LeBron coming back to Cleveland, it's all about finishing unfinished business, winning one for Cleveland and all that. This year feels all about LeBron. Like, this isn't a sequel. This is like a spin-off or its own entity. Like, it's a completely different focus. And what Sam said, like, with the Warriors losing last year, you knew that they're going to be back. I feel like we're going to at least get a one or two more of these, like, at some point. I don't know if the Warriors are going to be more difficult to beat in the future, less, what the situation is going to be.
They're signing Chris Bosh this summer. So,
we got Anthony Davis coming in a couple of years. So.
We make the mistake of projecting longevity, and maybe I'm doing that with the Cavs. Maybe we're doing it with the Warriors. I mean, so many unexpected things can change, either external or internal. But it really does feel like the Cavs are playing with house money to some extent, and the pressure of that championship last year, the absence of a championship from last year would have left, probably would have broken this team apart. Like, they would have traded Love at the deadline and all that, but I think they're a much more confident team now, and it'll be interesting to see what happens, because LeBron's playing like he has nothing to lose.
Well, you know, I've made this observation since the playoffs started. LeBron, this has felt like a victory lap for LeBron. I mean, I think part of the reason why he's been so great is because there is no pressure.
Yeah.
And he, like, I mean, there was the beer thing. I mean, he just looks like he's having fun. Well, he looks like he's having fun. Whereas, you know, there were large stretches the last two seasons since he went back to Cleveland where it was like the weight of the freaking world was on his shoulders and – you know, every other conversation was legacy talk.
And now, did he make the right decision? And
right.
Know, like, how many times did they say I should have never left Miami? You know,
right. And to me, the legacy talk that happens now is all just from kind of morons. You know, like right. Look, I've said this since the start of this year. If you want to make the argument that LeBron James is the best player of all time, like ahead of MJ, I can't fight it.
No,
I can disagree and say I'm not ready to say that yet, but I can't say that you're wrong. Like, that's where we're at. Like, that's a good place to be. Yeah. You know, if you would have told me LeBron's rookie year that after all the hype and all this, that he would have this kind of career, I would not have believed you. You know what I mean? Like,
he's exceeded the insanely high expectations he set for himself.
he's insane, and he's on a whole nother level. And, you know, it's why it's going to be so crushing for Cleveland when he signs with the Warriors next summer.
Finally, a backup for Draymond, someone who can play center and run the offense.
It's okay. The Cavs needed to hand over the reins to Chetty Osman.
Oh, man. You love Chetty, don't you?
I do love Chetty. He's I felt so validated because for like a year and a half, what I had described Chetty as was a small forward Tristan Thompson, the guy that just understands his role, does everything, fills in all the blanks. And then David Zavac, at the time he was the lead editor and manager at Fear the Sword, got an interview with David Griffin, who described him as a small forward Tristan Thompson. I'm like, he is either listening to my podcast or I am a great scout.
That's amazing. All right, so one of the things that I've been focusing on because of how – all right, first of all, I am tired of the previews. Like, this has been such a long layoff. Mm-hmm.
I'm losing my mind a little bit with it. Like, I mean, at least I got House of Cards today.
Oh, so man,
it's at least something to you know, get me through. But
spoiler alert, I've watched like 9 episodes. So
damn.
Yeah, okay, leave it at that. I'm halfway through the first one.
Oh my god, you won't believe what happens when Trump shows up. but so one of the things I've been trying to focus on is some of the guys that, you know, the end of the rotation guys that we aren't talking about. And
like Kevin Durant.
Trying to figure. Well, actually, now I've mentioned that Kevin Durant is like, he's like a really nice successor. Well, in this series, Kevin Love kind of is that guy, right?
Mm-hmm. Like, so this is actually one of the main things I probably disagree with Justin on, or I don't know. I have a Cavs fans seem pretty confident that like Kevin Love will have an impact, like a bigger impact, like a consistent impact, not like a random game seven, you know, taking care of the cripple guy who can't beat him off the dribble. But I just don't see how he's going to be, if the Warriors attack him, how he's going to be a player they can keep on the court for extended minutes.
The key point there, though, is will the Warriors attack him in the pick and roll?
Mm-hmm. They will if Mike Brown's the coach.
You sure? Because, I mean, I haven't really seen, like, did the pick and roll numbers go way up in the last series?
Mike Brown's played more matchups. So
yeah,
he's been willing to
expose matchups.
It's been a lot of get the switch and isolate someone. It's part of the reason that Clay has been below par in offense is because of that. He's taken like 4 less shots a game, and those shots are basically going to Steph and KD. And then also, he's kind of the one who thrives most off of the motion and the movement offense.
Yeah, the design plays.
He's just not a guy who you're gonna switch it to and make an off the dribble move. Whereas Steph and KD obviously can do that, you know, all game.
Right.
So he's been kind of the one who's been hurt by Mike Brown giving you know, Steph and KD more freedom, but I think it kind of makes them a better team because sometimes I think Kerr said it actually after the Christmas game. He said it as an aside, like some of that cute stuff might not work later in the playoffs. And I was kind of like, I wish you could have realized that 7 months ago.
wait, hang on. Now playing Anderson Varejao was not cute. Come on, that was a well thought out strategy. To play a guy who's over the hill.
A veteran.
Yeah, a veteran.
You know what the funniest thing is? He did the same moves that I crushed him for in Game 7 against Cleveland were the moves he made in Game 7 versus Oklahoma City, and they worked against Oklahoma City. Like, I don't know what Anderson Varejao did, but he actually played really well against the Thunder. He had that one move where he took Cantor off the dribble. Which
behind the back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it should tell you everything you know about Cantor's defense.
Serge Ibaka's older than him, so.
That's right.
But either way, it's kind of funny. It's like the same kind of irrational moves that worked in the previous Game 7 kind of reality bit him in Game 7 against Cleveland. But either way, it seems like they're, we might not get the extended McAdoo run we got last finals.
Now, here's my question.
That's probably not.
I completely agree, or at least Mike Brown has shown a willingness to attack matchup advantages, where or at least more so than Kerr has. What I'm questioning and I'm curious about is how traditional is he going to go? Is he going to show a willingness to play small ball Draymond at center for 30 minutes a game?
Yeah, we talked about this the other night. Right. I would start the same lineup from game four of the Spurs series. I would roll out Kevin Durant, jump in the tip, and McCaw on the wing. And I would just start there, and I would get a 20-point lead in the first 5 minutes, and then I would coast.
The flip side to it is starting with it with LeBron and Kyrie having their absolute maximum of legs, they should be able to get to the rim. The biggest worry about going small is exposing Draymond to foul trouble.
Right.
He's pretty good at avoiding it, but the Warriors have tended to like to use it as a four-minute trump card at the end of quarters type of thing. Like, let's it's a 2-point game. Let's like push and make it a 10-point game here, that sort of thing, to kind of keep him fresh. So I would actually I don't really have a problem with them using traditional centers to start the game and going small as they need to. I think the key for the Warriors is going to be having to rotate those centers on 3 to 5 minute spurts, because they'll just tire out, and Tristan Thompson is a lot to handle. Maybe Zaza can probably do it for 3 to 4 minutes, like giving his absolute effort. But if you're sticking him out there for 7 minutes in a row, his legs are just going to give out, and then Tristan's going to take advantage of it, right?
And I think the more traditional they go, the higher the likelihood there is that Kevin Love makes an impact in the series, because you can hide him on Zaza and JaVale McGee. You might be able to hide him on Iguodala. That's something they're going to have to experiment with.
Definitely put him on David West. Yeah, I mean, basically, anytime the Warriors roll out one of their traditional centers, he's got a defensive matchup that should be fine.
And I don't know how much time Draymond's going to spend on him, because lacking that backup help, lacking those centers that are rim protectors, I think that's going to mean that Draymond has to roam more to defend shots from Kyrie and LeBron at the rim, especially in those traditional lineups. So I think that takes away from what he's able to do to Kevin Love, or at least what he's done in the past. The Cavs are going to attack matchup advantages as well, and they're going to put Steph and Zaza in the pick and roll as much as possible if that's something that the Warriors are going with.
Yeah, have the Cavs used Kevin Love as a screener a lot? I feel like
No. They're not going to use Kevin Love.
Using really the pick and pop and stuff like that, are they?
Yeah.
That much?
They are a bit. It
more with LeBron than with Kyrie, though.
Yeah.
Because I do think Draymond's going to the Warriors want to give him a free roll, but they're probably going to also just play him on Kevin Love some, especially if they think they can get that to mean he switches on to Kyrie or LeBron.
Right.
Go ahead.
So the other big thing that was sort of a takeaway from last year's finals was how Steph Curry was officiated off the ball. Now, I don't know if you guys have noticed, but they've really tightened up on the physicality against Steph in the playoffs. If that continues, is there any way that the Cavs can contain Steph Curry? Or do you think Steph's putting up 30 a game because they're not going to be able to bump him?
Well, if you're not allowed to jam got soft ball, then that takes away from basketball, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't feel like they're going to it's the finals. They always give a little more leeway. I think Steph's going to get bumped off ball. I think one thing they've done in the playoffs is use him less exotically off ball. Like, he's not running off of four screens as much as he used to.
Which exposes him to that contact.
Right.
It does. I mean, it does make the game easier for everyone else, because he's drawing 2 to 3 bodies when he's doing that. It's like a selfless way to just give KD a bunch of space.
he's got amazing gravity. It's incredible. Yeah.
And but they've been kind of using him a little more directly, which is probably part of the reason that they've they've had such an easy playoff run. I mean, part of it's just because they have a lot more talent than the opponents they've played. But I don't think the off-ball stuff's going to change. I just can't see an official in, like, game 3 or 5 of the finals, like, giving Steph free throws because Tristan Thompson or J.R. Smith is holding his jersey or pushing him. You might get one whistle here or there, but...
One of my favorite things this whole season has been when Warriors Twitter, anytime the game was tight, Warriors Twitter just going, like, just completely going in on Steve Kerr. Anytime that you guys had a possession and Steph Curry didn't have the ball in his hands. I mean, it was just like Steve Kerr might as well have been, I don't know, who's the worst coach we can think of? Mike Dunleavy. Yeah, Randy Whitman. I mean, it was just incredible. Like, it's so funny.
Randy got it done in the playoffs, so I don't know if we should even go there.
Paul
Pierce. That's a man who can flip the switch.
Yes, exactly.
I do agree with you. Like, I think, it's a tough balance because Steph's both great on ball and probably the best off ball decoy in the NBA. So. I can't blame a coach for, like, wanting to utilize him in every way possible, but sometimes it felt like they just went away from the bread and butter too much. And also, yes, some of it's Warrior fans being greedy. The team's averaged about 70 wins a game for a season, so, like, the idea of a two-game losing streak was, like, the sky's falling. You know, like, you kind of get out of touch with what reality of the NBA is when your team's generally, you know, it just rolls through regular season like that. So, right. I do know that Kerr had an added emphasis to want to experiment in the regular season because he feels like going for 73 and, like, the pressure of it, and not coaching half the year didn't let him try certain things that, maybe he wished he knew going into the finals. It's like a Popovich type of thing.
Yeah. So. They had no adversity last year whatsoever. And this year, I think they had that when KD went out. I think that, That stretch where KD went out was really, really important for them. Would they lose 3 out of 5 or something like that?
Yeah, they lost the first 3 games he sat, and yeah, it was like 4 and 5 games, and then they pretty much swept the rest of the season out.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. Well, so before I wrap this up, what I want you guys to do, okay? We're going best case scenario for your respective teams, okay? And we'll start with Justin. So best case scenario, they win the title, and then what happens this summer? Because I'm already thinking summer because 28 other teams are already thinking summer. So they win the title. Cavs win the title. Let's say they win it in 5, so decisive.
Yes.
What happens this summer?
They move Iman Shumpert for either draft picks or cheap assets. Dwayne Wade opts out and agrees to a bench role or Vince Carter, someone like that. Chetty Osman comes over. Maybe they develop Eddie Tavares into a good third string center behind Channing Frye, kind of that more traditional look. I don't know if Deron Williams is going to be sticking around. I've heard a few people mention that they don't believe it's going to be likely. But getting
Deron,
a couple
of seems like someone who chases the money, and I don't think Cavs are going to give him the money.
Yeah, I think Deron, and I think he made himself some money too. He's looked pretty good.
Yes, absolutely. He's played really well. He could definitely still start somewhere. So I think he's gone. They'll probably try to move Shumpert for backup point guard. That would be my assumption. I wouldn't expect anything earth shattering. Most of the core is locked up. The starting 5 are locked up, so they're going to count on internal growth and bringing Osman over for the most part, and then signing some veterans. I don't know if Richard Jefferson's going to stay,
he's going to retire.
He might, but he also on his most recent podcast, he's like, when I retire in like 2 years, you can never take anything he says seriously, but they'll look to replace him with some veterans. The dream would be Vince Carter just because of my Canadian-ness.
All right, so worst case scenario.
Worst case scenario?
They lose. Do you see them doing anything differently? Because to me, the Cavs do what you said, whether they win or lose.
I think there's a possibility depending on – I mean, it's hard to say, but like – I could see them floating Kevin Love and assets for someone like Paul George if he's on the market, win or lose. Like, that would be an extreme thing. But let's say Boston blows its load on other players, a trade for Jimmy Butler or something like that. If Indiana feels like he's gone, maybe Kevin Love, Amon Shumpert, assets package works for something like that. I could see them throwing that out there because if this doesn't work, what they're doing this year, they're going to have to look for ways to play not necessarily the Warrior style, but a little more versatile. They're still going to need to maintain that the length advantage that they have, but I think they're going to look for a little more defensive versatility if this doesn't work out.
Gotcha. All right, Sam.
All right, so, well, here's the thing. Best case for fans and for the team might not be the same thing. Best case for fans would be Steph showing out in a way that no one could ever bring up his finals performances ever again, and winning a finals MVP and the Warriors, like, handily doing it. It's basically Steph looking like how he's looked in the playoffs or he looked last year, actually, against Cleveland. Best for the team might be KD being the best player, winning finals MVP, and taking the non-Bird raise so that they can hold the Bird rights and keep Iguodala and Livingston and those guys. But I think, best case scenario for the Warriors is they win handily, so everyone's got good feelings. Steph and KD come back. They figure out something for Iguodala, who they want to keep, probably more so than Livingston. I don't think they can keep both of them. I think Livingston's going to get a pretty nice payday, and being as he hasn't made, big money in his career like Andre Iguodala has, he's going to take it. And then, like McCaw and Jones and those guys develop a little more over the summer, and they turn into rotation pieces. They're obviously going to hit like the veteran market, looking for like cheap older guys who can give them a minute here or there.
Chris Bosh.
Yes. Well, I don't know if Chris Bosh will want to really come to the West Coast, considering his issue is flying, and West Coast teams fly more.
So, no, he's been cleared.
He's going to have a tough time getting any team to actually clear him.
Right. Right. No, I know. It's just one of my favorite jokes to keep bringing up here in the last couple weeks.
So that's best case scenario. They they win and everyone's happy and they keep it together. Worst case is they don't just lose. They lose in like a 2004 Lakers fashion where there's like some ridiculous like infighting and like, I don't know, Steph tries to take over a game and goes like 4-for-30 like Kobe did that year or something.
And, or the Cavs recruit Durant like the Warriors did in the Western Conference Finals.
But I don't know. I think it's very – there's a very small chance that both don't resign in the summer. But obviously if the finals go in a very weird direction, like not just a loss, like a embarrassing, like implosion type of loss, you might lose them, Maybe you lose Steph. I don't know. So that's, God, that's the worst case. That'd be wild.
As somebody who sort of roots for chaos, I have in my head, I've got this whole scenario where Steph goes to Charlotte, even though there's no like, yeah, he's from there, but
there's
like,
not even a positional like, yeah, it's like
from, right.
I mean, I guess I mean,
they could move Kemba. Kemba's a good player and he's on a decent contract. They could move Kemba. If they could get Steph Curry, they would move Kemba. Yes. But where KD goes somewhere else, and then the Warriors all of a sudden are,
the Klay Thompson show. Let's go. Well,
yeah, right. It'd be Draymond Green averaging a 25-point triple-double and being the best defender in the league and, taking his place as the best player in the league like he's supposed to. Like everyone predicts.
I don't want to test that theory, but.
No. But I do, like. I don't think it's a lock that these guys are going to stay. I think, if anything, the last couple of years has kind of shown that nothing with these guys, it's impossible to unpack any of their statements that they say the season before free agency.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of them.
A month before. Come on.
Right.
a month before LeBron left with the decision, he said, I have one goal and one goal only, and that's bringing a championship to Cleveland. I mean, well, but maybe he was playing the long game. And
I was going to say, you got to think about that 4 years. He wanted him to get those draft picks. And
you think the Draymond suspension was impressive. I was saying a year after he left that it was all part of a plan with the Illuminati.
Oh, God. Was Jay-Z a part of this?
No. Jay-Z wasn't a part of it. But actually, Matt Moore will be able to attest to this because he even tweeted me after the decision. He's like, I thought you guys were crazy. And we were mostly having fun with it. I mean, that's what I do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the whole thing should be fun, right? Like, even...
Oh, come on. Of course.
One of my biggest pet peeves this year, and I said I was going to wrap it up, but one of my biggest pet peeves this whole year was the way that KD was treated for wanting to go work at a different place. Like, just leave the guy alone. Let him live his life. Like, by all means, boo him on the court. But, like, just some of the stuff was just so emotionally charged. And
I think basketball fans as a whole, though, have improved from where we're at with the decision. And we're just going to become
No one's ever got it as bad as LeBron.
That's right.
KD got it pretty bad. The next guy who's of that, like, ilk of superstardom, like, LaMarcus Aldridge, all-star, but not that level.
Right.
No one really cared. But the next guy who does it of that ilk's probably going to get it a little less so than
I bet KD it would be. It. I bet if Steph Curry left the Warriors and went to Charlotte, it would be the opposite. I bet every hot take and think piece would be about how Steph Curry did the right thing, not like
those damn progressive loyal Warriors fans.
Right. Yeah.
I personally couldn't hate Steph. I wouldn't be surprised if some people found a way, because there'll be some quote afterwards that can be misconstrued. Fans will be emotional, but
there's going to be one guy that burns a jersey, and I'm projecting that on your entire fan base, man. I'm telling you.
All right.
Andy
all right.
Is burning jerseys.
Andy is definitely burning a jersey. All right, we're going off the rails, so I'm going to wrap it up. Thanks, guys. This was fun.